from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon or go to alanon.org.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. It's 6 o'clock time for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yeah, what's up?
And what a show we have tonight. We have all kinds of things to talk about. Where's that coming from? Why? Hold on a second.
That's not our theme.
That's not our theme. What's...
Wait, is this,
I did press.
Are you being referential?
Am I, do I look like I'm being referential?
Am I supposed to pick up?
can't stop it. I just can't stop it. I know what happened. Our sports guys rigged up the studio so that when miracles happen involving Liverpool, that plays. And that apparently, Champions League, remember that? That's going on. And Liverpool were behind, I think, 3-0 to Barcelona from the first game. And they won today 4-0, which means they win on aggregate and they advance to the final. They beat all the odds.
That's good. We like Liverpool.
Well, we do. We like Southampton more, but Liverpool will do. So good. Good on you.
I'm still mad that the Mariners lost to the Yankees last night.
Did they lose?
I'm pretty
sorry.
Sure they lost. Yeah,
oh,
it was like
it really hurts.
Bottom of the ninth, 3-7 or something. I don't know what the final was, but
the bigger number is the one that is the victorious one.
Apparently, that's how that game works.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
Uh-huh.
But okay, that's good. We're back in the football thing, right?
They play again then, don't they? It's yes, there was Monday. Today's Tuesday, so they probably play another game.
Yeah, it's probably a series of sorts.
They tend to lump them together.
But we'll see.
Can you name a single Mariners player? I'll say right now, even though I probably should, I don't know a single Yankees player. Couldn't care less. Yeah.
No, not really.
I prefer the Mets because I just like the Mets better, but I don't really know them either. It's just it's more about
Ken Griffey Jr.
and things.
Yeah, Ken Griffey Jr.
Mickey Mantle.
Uh-huh.
Babe Ruth. Yeah, okay. Well, we have a whole hour to show our ignorance. We have 2 hours of show to stick into 1 hour, so we're going to try and do that as much as humanly possible.
Randy Johnson.
I thought he was a country singer.
No.
Okay. We had quite a week, quite a weekend, actually.
Did we?
It was the five-borough bike ride. Everyone thinks it's a five-borough bike race, but no, it's not a race, it's a ride. What you do is you ride through all five boroughs, and then you recuperate for the remainder of the week. And we missed it last year, so I was really determined to do it this year. You know, it's a workout, 40 miles on a bike. You got a few hills, not many, because New York City isn't that hilly. But when you go on bridges, particularly the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, I don't know if you've ever seen that, but that's quite an incline that goes on for a ways. The Queensboro Bridge, that's a climb. It's not a mountain or anything like that. But, you know, you kind of work it up in your head that, I've got to do this thing coming up. And you sort of have to get yourself into shape, as it were. So I've been practicing, you know, riding around in circles in the parking lot, which is the best I can do. That actually is harder than it sounds, because when you're riding in streets, you see things going by, you're conversing with people, it goes faster. When you're just riding around doing laps in the parking lot, it's boring and you kind of are aware of time passing and not much being accomplished. Going into this thing, I was kind of a little trepidatious. We have to go into the city the day before, because the way they work it, you have to get your tags that identify you as a rider. You have to get that the day before at a particular arena, and that's the only way to get it. You can't get it through the mail or anything like that. So you have to be in there the day before, and then, of course, you start at the crack of dawn, so that means waking up at 6 in the morning, and I don't generally do that. So just going to sleep and waking up is a challenge and something to dread. But then, you know, Sunday morning came around, and, you know, we woke up all bright-eyed and eager to do this thing, and we heard the driving rain outside. And I got to tell you, that was difficult. It was difficult just hearing that and knowing that, now we're supposed to go outside on our bikes and ride around for a bunch of hours in the pouring rain. It was the hardest thing, just motivating ourselves to get out.
Yeah, the hardest part is getting out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But it certainly is interesting, the ability to, like, see different neighborhoods and stuff. It's, I think, the parallel between track and cross-country. Cross-country, you go through woods, you have all this different terrain. Track, it's just like a loop. And, yeah, like, the parking lot idea was great to get kind of all your equipment sorted and make sure your, you know, bike's working and your, you know, practice beforehand. But I had an idea. I was just wondering, as you were saying that, does Stony Brook have, like, a bicycle trail around campus? That's a pretty big campus to perhaps have a specific loop. I'm just thinking,
well, like, we have those city bike-like things. I don't know what they call them here, but they're Stony Brook bikes.
That's not what I'm saying, though. There's
that implies
sidewalk.
There's a bike path somewhere for people to ride on.
Right, right. But I'm saying, is there a known trail on campus that is measured? Like, you know, it's the 2 mile loop or whatever.
I know there are paths that you share with pedestrians that go all the way out to South Pilot.
That's not what I'm saying.
They go around the campus. I don't know if they're measured.
Right, right. I'm saying there should be a specific, like, loop that's kind of the highway for bicycles, maybe shares some of those sidewalks, but mm-hmm. a specific measured bike trail, then community members, students alike, could take advantage of that on campus. Maybe next time you'd be able to ride around here instead of in a parking lot.
Yeah, imagine riding around the circumference of the campus.
That would be really cool.
That would be your 40 miles right there, because it's huge.
It is a massive campus, and I know there's a lot of wooded areas and different corners of the campus, and that's a cool project I just thought of. Anyway, but the ride itself in New York City is, as you said, enjoyable, but under most conditions. This was, I guess, the less than ideal condition, but it was at least partly heartening to put, you know, your gear together, make sure we're protected a little, even though at the end of the day we kind of just got as soaked as we could after a certain while
out there. You have to realize you can only get so wet, and either going to do this thing or not. And it was, you know, it's so easy to say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to sit this one out because it's going to be miserable. And I was so close to doing that. I'm very happy that you were, you know, pushing to get us to do this. And, you know, I'm not one for riding in the rain all that much. You've done it a lot more than I have. So, you know, once you get out there and you actually start moving, it's, you know, it's not the most pleasant thing in the world, but you get used to it.
The other thing is the wind chill was not as bad, I think. Mm-hmm. And also you got to keep it moving.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't stand still during the breaks too much. Because it is drudgery, but, you know, get it in one fell swoop. Don't break it up into tiny little sections. It's just going to prolong the chill. And given that there was less wind than the wind was not bad. There was less chill, rather, that is really what can make it miserable when you got that bone-chilling biting wind on your
right.
wet apparel and so on and so forth. So we braved it, and, yeah, I've been in many a rainy situation. I don't balk at this kind of
thing
riding.
Is, you set it up. You set it up well so that you were able to protect us against the elements. So you had kind of a unique system where you put plastic bags over our shoes.
Yeah, I made little booties for us.
Uh-huh.
I actually saw, like, some kids and some other people doing basically the same thing. Some of them were even wearing, like, Ziploc bags taped to their feet and then that inside their shoes. So they had, like, plastic liners in their shoes. We just threw them over our shoes and, like, used a bunch of tape and whatever, rubber bands to keep them sort of protected. That lasted for a little bit. It kept our feet mostly dry for maybe a couple hours. And then after we, I think, got through, like, the Queens area, there was a saturation point.
Yeah, that's inevitable. But just, you know, getting started, like you said, that's the hardest part, just getting on the road. And once you do that, you kind of feel like, you know, I'm going to keep going. I'm not going to let this stop me. And it's that feeling of accomplishment, that feeling of just being able to overcome the adversity that I think is just, it's hard to do. It's hard to really, you know, start. But once you do it, you feel like there's nothing you can't do. So, you know, whatever it is you're facing in life that is a challenge, jump into it. It's, you know, it might be hard, it might be inconvenient, might be uncomfortable, but finishing it is the accomplishment that will change you. And I just can't imagine how I would have felt if we had just decided for the second year in a row, it's too moist outside. Let's sit this one out. After a while, you start thinking, maybe I can't do this. Maybe it's getting too hard. Because you can put that in your head where it's all this riding, the prospect of hills. You start dreading things a lot more than you should be dreading them. If you look at the Queensboro Bridge on the FDR Drive, because we ride on the FDR Drive for a while on our bicycles, you see how high up it is, and you realize, wow, I've got to get up there somehow. How am I going to do that? How am I going to get from down here all the way up there and somehow be able to still be breathing? But you do. You do. As you approach the bridge, it's definitely an incline. A bunch of people get off their bikes, and if you have to do that, that's fine. But I kept pushing. I just kept pushing, went into the lower gears, and just kept telling myself, okay, I'm gonna count 20 more pedals, and then see how far I am, then another 20. I kept fooling myself, saying, okay, this is the last one. Okay, no, this is really the last one. And somehow I kept believing myself, and that got me to the point of Roosevelt Island, where all of a sudden, hey, I'm not going up anymore. I'm flat now, and soon I'll be going down. And that's kind of scary, too, when you're going down at a high speed in the wet and your brakes aren't working that well.
Yeah, I was going to comment on that. You don't realize it when you're out there, but you're really blocking out so many other things just to deal with the hazards in front of you, just what's in front of you. Mm-hmm. It's really a great way if you meditate at all, or you might have other ways of doing this, but it's a great way to be present and really focused on the next challenge, whatever's next. And it's as a side effect, you end up blocking out a lot of thoughts, and but at the same time, you can become comfortable and so practiced that you're subconsciously dealing with all the hazards and then working out other things in your life mentally. And I think it's a great way to work on stress and stress management. I think cycling's a great way to do that. And I have my own techniques, but just the way you're describing facing those hills and stuff like that. I mean, I like hills. I like developing my own pace. And as I think of it, it's really one foot after the other and repeat.
It's every pedal is one less pedal that you have to do.
Yep. Yeah.
All kinds of things. Or you just play Stairway to Heaven in your head until it's done and you've climbed a bridge in that time.
I get very quiet, too. I don't like to chat. I mean, I chat a little bit. I was checking in and, seeing how everything was working and how dry we were. We were just basically moving along there or coordinating.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I like to do it as a solitary thing. I like to just kind of be alone with my thoughts. And I like to hear what's going on around me. I noticed a lot of people have, headphones. That's fine if that's what you do when you, quote, work out.
Some people have boom boxes.
Yeah, I like the boom boxes better because, when you're riding, that was the other thought I had during the whole thing. I was like, I want to hear some really good music. When I'm done with this, I need to, up my music game because people would roll by and they'd have some jams going.
I tried to stay near the soul guy. He was playing Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. I was really cool, and I couldn't keep up with him, but it was nice while it lasted.
I was by the Jamaican guys that were playing reggae.
Oh, yeah. I saw them for a little while, too.
Yeah, they were cool. They're conversing and so on. But that's another inspiring thing. But I think headphones, you're missing out, and it's also a safety thing. You can't really hear what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And I like overhearing conversations and just... as you're riding by, or you have a funny funny moment. Somebody was kind of needling one of the NYPD riders, because some of the police officers do ride.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, yeah, he's still chugging along. He's like, I'm trying to.
It is so cool to see cops as people, because that's what they are. And it's good to interact on that level. It's a very almost literally disarming way of interacting. But just to give people an idea of how the whole thing is set up, what we have to do is, we got up at 6 a.m., got ourselves moving and prepared for the rain, and it was raining pretty much the whole time, and then rode downtown to around City Hall area, and that's where you meet a whole bunch of people, thousands of people.
32,000?
Well, not all at once. I think there's four waves. So, we were in the first wave, which is great because... That meant I can go as slow as I want. I can walk this thing if I have to, and I'll still probably make it before the last wave gets over.
You won't be diverted or anything.
Yeah, so, putting that in your mind where there's no pressure, that definitely helps.
My thing with pacing is I don't want to have to get off and walk, whether it's a hill, whether it's a straightaway. I just pace it as an endurance thing. However slow, however fast, and that first wave really helps with that.
Yeah.
Then I could just go at my pace, and I know I'll meet every one of those hills doing my own thing, but I won't ever, like, bonk out and have to walk. Or
you talk about conversing, though. The first part of the ride, everybody is conversing, because that is where you basically you go up 6th Avenue all the way through Manhattan, Midtown, Radio City, you name it. And it's so pleasant. You pass everything. You recognize everything. It's flat. You're talking to the people around you. Everyone is nice and chill, relaxed. And then you go into Central Park.
And people start wiping out.
Well, actually, somebody did wipe out right away.
A lot of people wiping out.
I don't understand. Well, I guess it's because it's wet.
That's what I was kind of alluding to, like, all the hazards. You don't realize how many hazards. Like, it was wet. It was slippery.
Almost wiped out because I hit a manhole cover, and it's slippery. So, yeah, it can happen.
It is no joke. Anything metal and smooth in the rain, you know, you have oil and stuff from vehicles that's then, like, mixing around. And it is so treacherous. But, again, if you focus, you're looking ahead, you basically face all of those challenges and keep it going.
Now, Central Park has a couple of hills, but they're pretty minor hills. You go up and down, mostly down, it feels like. You're through Central Park lengthwise before you know it, too. And there in Harlem, my favorite part of the whole ride, because everyone's going to church Sunday morning. It's a really friendly neighborhood, and a lot of people waving from the sidewalks, even in the rain.
They're handing out water, too.
Yeah, handing out all kinds of things. And then you make your way over heading east. I think you go over the Madison Bridge, and you come back on the 3rd Avenue Bridge. I might have it backwards, but you're basically in the Bronx just for a very brief period. In fact, the people in the Bronx aren't too happy about that. They want people to ride around the Bronx longer. I can see why. You're in the Bronx for about 5 minutes, maybe. Then you come back into Manhattan, and you ride down the FDR Drive. You see the Queensboro Bridge looming up ahead, and then you have to make that ascent onto the Queensboro Bridge. And once you do that, you pretty much coast all the way down. You're in Queens. You gotta loop around. I almost got knocked off the entryway or the exit to the bridge by some idiot who cut me off and made me swerve to the right. I almost hit another person as a result of that. They just kept on. I said, "Hey, I hope you don't drive like that," because, and they probably do, but no regard whatsoever.
I had someone stop in the covered tunnel portion of FDR. I was like on the right side on the inside, and this guy just basically stopped right in front of me, and I have like a wave of people coming behind me.
That's terrible.
I almost ran right into him, and he was like, "Sorry." I was like, yeah
you got a sorry. I didn't get anything. Got taillights, and the person just kept going.
I think it's important, even on the organized events like this, you gotta signal, use your regular passing, you know, voice or a bell.
Do you know your hand signals, listeners? Do you know your hand signals? We're going to demonstrate them now. This means turn right.
Mm-hmm.
That's turn left. I'm going to hit the phone there.
Yeah.
And this means stop.
Yeah, that's right. And stop is also slow down.
Right.
Or hazard.
Yeah.
You know, you could point at something on the road. But that's basically it. And I think a lot of people, that's why I mentioned the headphones. Mm-hmm. Like, a boombox is one thing, but if you're wearing headphones, you're not going to hear somebody, like, sort of over your shoulder saying, you know, on your left, that kind of stuff.
Right.
So, but I tend to be very, I am quite verbose when I signal and ride, even on an event like this, just because more signaling and stuff like that with that many people, I think, is just, it's a better way to go, and you're, you know, better safe than sorry kind of thing.
Absolutely,
so
yes.
Anyway, that helped a bit with the hazards, and it was a real thing.
So by this point, people are less talkative because they're basically just gone over the bridge, and now they're heading for the first major rest area. There's rest areas all along the way, but the big one is kind of at the halfway point in Astoria underneath the Triborough Bridge, and you hang out there for about 10 minutes or so, maybe longer, and then you basically hit the second half, which takes you down over Pulaski Bridge into Brooklyn, and you go through all interesting parts of Brooklyn.
Dumbo.
Yeah, and under the Manhattan Bridge, under the Brooklyn Bridge, and then you get onto the BQE. Boy, that's fun, because there's traffic coming at you on the eastbound side, but not on the westbound side because you've taken that over. And there's a couple of big hills there too. You're basically on the BQE, and you have to go up these hills. And
yeah, it's a raised, a rolling raised highway, and it does have some pretty wild rolling hills, as it were.
And after that bit of challenge, you're basically heading towards the finish, well, not the finish line, but the
approach.
The finish festival, which takes place in Staten Island, but you have to get over the Verrazano Narrows Bridge first. And that is the hardest part. And everyone says that. It's the hardest part because it's a long approach and it's a, you know, it's a hill. I used to stop right before doing that. I've done a few of these rides. I used to stop and just gather my thoughts and my, you know, get my breath back for about 10, 15 minutes sometimes, standing by the 86th Street exit. But the last two times, I've just kept going. I just kept going, and I just basically, this time I count to 100, and I did that three times. And I just, you know, I go as slow as I feel like going. Not a big deal. You keep your pace with other people around you who are also going slow. And before you know it, it's not as hard anymore. You're at the top, and then you start to coast, and you realize, hey, I'm done. I mean, you still have to go through Staten Island, but that's easy because you just ride to the Staten Island Ferry. That is amazing, that feeling. That is unmatched. And that's what I hope people, when they take on challenges, when they do things that they're trying to get out of because it might be unpleasant or it might be hard, you do it anyway because that feeling of accomplishment is something that just can't be matched. And, yeah, we got wet. We got really wet. It didn't stop even when we got back here. It was raining the whole day. Every time we were out on our bike, that was a signal for the skies to open up. It's okay. You know what? It took us 2 days to dry out, but we did it. And we're done. And now we can get on with our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe maybe we'll do some other bicycling in the off, quote, off season.
Yes.
But this marks the beginning of the bicycling season, and I hope... Yeah, tell us about your bicycling adventures if you have any planned for this summer. OTW@2600.com.
And, you know, we took the train in and we took the train out with our bikes. We have bike permits. You get bike permits with the LIRR. I think it's like $5, $10, something like that, but it's a lifetime permit. You just hold the card. As long as you don't lose the card, you're fine. The thing is, they don't have space for bikes on the trains. It's really annoying because you're trying to cram it in somewhere and not block people. There's like one car per train where there might be space for a bike, but you don't know where that car is. And it's really unfriendly for bikes. The conductors are fine, but there's not space.
Something that would help with that, that they did on Sound Transit, some of the light rail, is basically like hooks so you can hang it off the side vertically.
Inside, not outside.
Inside the train. Okay. Yeah, but hang it off the side like wall. In the area where the seats flip down,
right.
If there was hardware in there that you could hang a bicycle, I think that would save a lot of space, and then the thing wouldn't be rolling or falling over in the pathway. It wouldn't be underfoot when the conductor's trying to go through. And, you know, if you could hang three bicycles per car or four bicycles, that'd be great.
You know, we're getting new cars, electric cars. M9 electric car fleet is being debuted this month.
Yeah, I've been talking about this for, like, years.
No, you've been talking about the Subway. This is the LIRR.
Oh, they're getting new cars?
Yeah, the M7s, that's the last one that got rolled out in 2002.
I'll believe it when I see it.
I think those are the ones with the single doors and the red LEDs on the side. But these ones, yeah, they're being debuted. They need more because they're going into Grand Central pretty soon. But I was looking at the features, like things they're going to be adding to this, hoping that I'd see something about bikes. But no, what they're going to be having, I mean, they might have more space for bikes. They just don't mention it. Closed loop seat armrests that prevent clothes snags. Apparently that's a big deal.
Uh-huh.
Electrical outlets on both sides of the car and each row of seats.
Probably with USB ports,
I think. Yeah, why not? Car number display, car 2 of 6, for instance. Yeah, I hate that. You know, when you go to Forest Hills or something, only the first four cars will platform. How do I know what car I'm in? You got to tell me. Am I in the third car? Am I in the sixth car? I don't know.
Yeah. What else?
Front of car exterior destination signs, meaning that as the train's approaching, you see where it's going.
Yeah.
I guess that's kind of handy.
What is it for?
Yeah. Yes. Powered door between trains.
Okay.
You press a button, the door opens.
Nice.
They encourage you to go between cars.
Yeah.
Improved bathroom doors. Well, anything will be an improvement over what they have now.
No comment.
Additional coat hooks in bathroom. What do you mean additional coat hooks in bathroom? Have you ever hung a coat in a bathroom on a train?
Ew.
I mean, I'd leave my coat. I'm assuming I'm traveling with somebody, or I assume the people around me aren't going to steal my coat. But if I take my coat to the bathroom, okay, why do I need additional? How many coats am I going to take to the bathroom? Are multiple people going? Additional coat hooks.
Ew.
Okay.
Ew.
Yeah, ew. Additional bathroom air quality treatment. Okay, a lot of bathroom things.
Yeah, that was part of my no comment. It's like instead of a nice big fan... That's what they need is some exhaust, you know, because...
High-velocity, no-touch toilet room hand dryer.
Oh, wow, okay.
Just like the sound of that.
Like one of those Dyson blade
things? High-velocity. You don't have to touch it.
Yeah.
You don't have to touch anything. Scratch-proof mirror. Because apparently people are scratching the mirrors.
Yeah, they're like...
Who scratches a mirror?
Taggers and graffiti artists.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
4 32-inch multimedia screens in each car.
For ads?
Yeah, of course, for ads, or maybe for actual information. You know, in Europe, what they do, they tell you how fast the car is going. They tell you what the next station is. They show you a map. They do all kinds of things. That's informative. They tell you the date and time. Imagine that.
In Switzerland, they tell you about other forms of transit.
Yes.
Like the tram will tell you about all the buses you can connect to on the tram.
Uh-huh, and what time they're arriving and what track they arrive on and things like that.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'm getting worked up. 4 to 6 additional seats per pair. 217 seats per pair. I'm not sure what all that means.
Pair of cars.
Energy-efficient LED lighting. Improved ride quality from the M7. That's kind of vague.
It's like suspension.
Text-to-speech service updates. Suspension system flip seats, which prevents slamming.
Okay.
I don't like that when the seat slams. You don't know there's a seat that somebody stood up. Quieter side doors that operate with less impact force and are easier to open manually in an emergency. Slightly increased width of seats because people are fatter than they used to be, and increased window tint, which reduces sun glare. So, as we have performance on the LIRR, but that's only the electric. We don't even get electric out of here. We get diesel.
I really think they should have the integrated diesels, so they don't have to have diesel locomotives. They just have, like, modern cars that have, like, an integrated diesel engine on each side.
Uh-huh.
Well, they're possible. They exist. They're all over Germany in the, like, rural areas.
I used to be against electrification, but now I think it's a good idea because, you know, if we can move faster, that would be a nice out here to the Port Jefferson line. It's all diesel from Huntington. The Greenport line, it's all diesel from Ronkonkoma. Montauk is diesel. Even Oyster Bay in Nassau County for some reason is diesel. They just don't have electric trains.
It's loud. The emissions are not so good. I mean, there's a lot of compelling reasons to get rid of it, but it's what we have for now.
Yes. Here's some interesting news. This is taking place in Port Jefferson. We talked about the deer situation and how people in Port Jefferson were outraged that there's so many deer around and they keep crashing into them. And we had some fun with that. People are speaking out, as I knew they would. So once you give people the opportunity to be heard, they will say something. And they had this secret meeting that people didn't know about. Well, now people found out, and they're talking back. Long Island Orchestrating for Nature will be holding a protest outside Port Jefferson Village Hall at 6 p.m. on May 8th. That's tomorrow. And of course, we have the other radio show to do, so we can't participate. Everything always happens Wednesday evening, you know?
Maybe we should stop telling people what we're doing Wednesday nights.
Yeah, maybe we should. 6 p.m. Wednesday night, outside Port Jefferson Village Hall. Long Island Orchestrating for Nature will be protesting the upcoming deer hunt. Here's what they say. Port Jefferson officials are considering hiring the USDA to slaughter potentially hundreds of deer. However, lethal methods of population control are not only inhumane but often ineffective, as their high reproductive rate can quickly compensate for declines in population. That is true. You know, you can kill a bunch of deer, but you know what? The male deer are not faithful to the female deer. They will impregnate as many deer as they can find, and before you know it, you'll have more deer, and they'll be healthier, too, because there'll be less competition. And you're right back where you started. So that's not the solution. Continuing with the statement here, Port Jefferson could and should use non-palatable plants, deterrent tools, and immuno contraception to humanely manage deer. Those are the things that work. If you basically have a situation where a deer can't have kids for, you know, 3 years, I think is how long the treatment lasts for, that definitely affects the population, and you're not massacring deer. You know, and you don't want to hit the deer, drive carefully. Seriously, drive carefully. That's how you don't hit deer. They pop out, yeah, they surprise you. A lot of things can do that, and if you're paying attention, you'll be able to stop before something bad happens.
They're not the only things that you should look out for when you're driving on, not arterials, but on side roads and stuff out on the island. Definitely in this part of Suffolk County, there's all kinds of wildlife that you could be hitting, including domestic animals, you know, people's dogs and cats that, you know, are outside, as well as raccoons and squirrels and everything else. Like, there's just, and of course, you know, elementary kids and humans of all ages. I saw a guy with a walker walking the other day, like just out for a stroll in his pajamas on the side of the road, no sidewalk. And I was like, wow.
You sure that wasn't something you should have reported to somebody?
Should I have? Is that okay? I don't know. He had a walker, and he looked like he was in pajamas, but you know what? He needed that. And
you should check for like silver alerts or whatever they call those things.
Yeah.
People wander away from home. I don't know. You see a guy in the pajamas with the walker, and it's just...
It was a nice day. I think maybe he was just getting the mail. But anyway, the point is, there are other reasons than deer to drive slowly and carefully and be attentive.
Most of which are other cars and
yeah.
People just acting stupid. I mean, I don't want to tempt fate or boast or anything like that. We've had plenty of opportunity to hit deer, and we've never done it. You know, because we've had to slam on brakes a few times, absolutely.
We have good brakes.
We have good brakes, but we also have eyes, and we use them. And you can't be distracted. You can't be texting. You can't be turning around yelling at kids. You can yell at your kids by staring straight ahead. You can do that.
Yeah, my mom did that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Still does.
Here's some more local news. This is interesting. I just found out about this. A Smithtown restaurant is apologizing after employees shouted homophobic slurs at a gay couple last week. Yeah, Mark Khalid Asset, his husband Greg Khalid Asset, detailed the event that occurred at Casa Rustica on West Main Street last Friday. Now, according to their posts, while leaving the eatery, the couple walked through a circle of waiters who shouted faggot in Spanish and then all laughed at us. We actually felt in danger because they were all around us. This is Smithtown. This is one town over. Why do I say that? It could happen in Brookhaven Town as well, right here. Craig wrote that it was a rude reminder that homophobia is alive and well on Long Island. It continues to happen to far too many of us every day, he wrote. Now, Mark updated his original post to reflect that he spoke to the owner of Casa Rustica, who apologized personally to both of them. The owner called us with a sincere apology. I do believe that he was very upset over what happened. He assured us that he has already spoken with the staff and will continue to do so. He offered to terminate the employees, and Craig and I told him not to. We asked instead that he ensure us that he would teach and coach them, and he agreed. We believe ignorant people can learn and views can change. This is incredible, just seeing how these folks responded. You know, don't fire the people, teach them.
Mark went on. Like Mexican guys working in the kitchen or whatever?
Spanish speaking. They were speaking Spanish, so
okay. Take
whatever you want from that.
Right.
Mark went on to state that he and Craig did not post about the incident to close the restaurant or to get the employees fired, but rather to spread awareness to foster change. After our discussion with the owner, we do believe that we have accomplished this, Mark wrote. We believe he has taken this seriously, and hopefully the ignorant employee has now been enlightened. It's about positive change, not negative consequences. Mark and Craig, please run for office. Please help us, because we need more of this. My God, this is... Talk about turning something ugly and negative into something positive and inspirational. Right here, you know, in our backyard. Now, here's what the restaurant posted on its Facebook page. We posted to the couple on their Facebook page. I'm not exactly sure where on Facebook. We are deeply sorry and saddened for the unfortunate incident that took place on May 3rd. We do not condone the actions of one employee's irresponsible behavior, and it does not reflect the reputation of our 34-year establishment. We accept everyone's lifestyle. The employees have been suspended until further notice, and we are making sure they are enlightened of modern-day lifestyles. There's no room for anyone who isn't educated in our restaurant. We hold our staff to the highest esteem of professionalism and personal integrity. People are proud to be part of our establishment, and only people of the highest character will be employed here going forward. Again, the actions of one individual does not reflect us as a whole. We've been in business for 34 years and never had such an unfortunate incident happen like this before. Please accept our apology. We have numerous employees that are part of the LGBTQ community, and we support them 100%. The past couple of days have been heartbreaking for us, and we feel terrible that these customers had to go through such a horrific experience in our building. No excuse for it. We promise you that we will never let anything like this happen again. From the bottom of our hearts, we are incredibly sorry and hope someday you will accept our deepest condolences. And I got to say, you know, that rings sincere to me. And I think, you know, in a situation like this, obviously, you have to be angry about it, but also it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity to communicate and to grow stronger as a result. And I think what you know, these guys that experienced this horror, the way they dealt with it and the way the owner of the restaurant seems to be dealing with it, that is how you move forward. That's how you move. Not condemnations, not demands, not petitions, communication. I think here's an example of how that can work.
Yeah, I think also, like, you have to empathize with that those staff members. I mean, they may be coming from family and cultural backgrounds that maybe have a little bit more machismo than the average city mouse might be exposed to.
Not empathize. Like, I don't know if I can do that. I can see where they might be coming from, but yeah, but they need to learn. They need to learn. And
so which is it? Are we proud of them or are we condemning them?
Proud of who?
I don't know. I'm just trying to comment on it. So are we high-fiving them for what? Which is it?
The employees? Absolutely
yeah.
Not. No, they were the ignorant ones.
Right. So
right.
I'm, in my experience, aware that some people, especially in the Spanish-speaking communities, have a lot more emphasis on machismo. Tell me I'm wrong, but I think it's alive and a huge issue for a lot of people in those communities, just as much as it is in other groups.
Yeah, I mean, I can.
You know, English-speaking groups have the same kind
of. A lot of English-speaking groups too. Yes, absolutely.
Right, right. But I think that like that may be where that's coming from. That like it's not really, you know, it's very hard for outness to jive with family situations that, you know, may have a strict religious or other kind of cultural influences that really keep things closeted and emphasize being
okay.
Macho.
I hear
stuff,
you. No,
you
I know? Hear what you're saying, but it's not hard for them. It's not hard for them to be, you know, I hate the word tolerant because that just means that you're holding your nose or something. But it's not hard for them to treat people with dignity, and I think that's something that we need to make sure they get. And I think what we're seeing here is progress in that direction.
Yeah, it's definitely progress. But I just hope that it's also like understood that queer people witness straight people all the time doing things that, were you to do it as a queer person, mm-hmm. you would be laughed at like this, mocked and derided. You know, but straight people do it
then you need
without
to do it
even
more.
Thinking. You know,
then queer people need to
easier
do it more.
Easier said than done.
Oh, I know, absolutely.
Easier
this,
said than done.
None of this is easy. None
yeah.
of it, but you can't hold back because somebody else is going to act like an ass. You know, you need to provoke that and you need to confront that. And
sure.
this I mean, I'm not saying these guys were doing that, but the situation happened. And they handled it brilliantly, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and we all do, I think, in what ways we can, to support people that are different than we are and so on and so forth. But that's one of the things that I think that really bothers me about situations like this is that, you know, people making out on the train or wherever, you know, any dang place, that, you know, in a lot of other groups, you know, like or that a lot of other individuals would not have the same freedom to participate in or would not be go unnoticed and be just sort of background mm-hmm. And sort of assumed to be or otherwise like taken just as like a normal activity. Queer people end up being sort of unusual and then, you know, pointed out because it isn't done. And part of that is why society is an offshoot or a byproduct of society repressing this kind of stuff in the first place. It's also, I would argue, much of the reasons why the Catholic Church, I think, is culpable for a lot of their own abuse and stuff because they've repressed this stuff.
Every religion has played a part in this. This is the one thing they can all unite on, it seems.
Yep. Anyway, I could go on and on. What else you got?
Let's just, like I said, confront this and push forward because progress is being made. 10 years ago, this would have been different. 20 years ago, very different.
Yeah, but I see old waves coming back.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
A lot of this stuff, like guys like that coming up, thinking like, you know, they're onto something new. Like, come on, people have been, you know, snickering about that kind of stuff for eons.
Well,
so
we're seeing a lot of this coming back, and obviously in today's political climate, we're seeing all kinds of negative things, all kinds of returns to ways of the past that we thought we had moved beyond. And you know, seeing it every day with what's happening with Congress and officials and things.
That is the right way to confront it, though. I mean,
what?
Given that things are changing, I think that when you see something that looks like a throwback, that you know does not look right, this is how you handle it.
Absolutely.
So I agree.
Yeah. So So as far as what's happening in the rest of the country, boy. We don't have enough time to even get into all this, but we're talking about holding the Attorney General in contempt of Congress because he's refusing to show up to honor subpoenas. It seems like everybody in the Trump administration just has stopped obeying the law. White House has ordered Don McCann to defy the House subpoena. Like I said, the contempt vote is scheduled for tomorrow for Attorney General Barr and the Mueller report. They want to keep that secret, not show it even to members of Congress, let alone the public. And the tax returns that the law says Congress can request and they shall be furnished. No, we're not going to do it. What are you going to do about it? And that's the question. What are they going to do about it? Okay, they're going to hold this guy in contempt of Congress. Great, but what happens then? You know, it gets hammered out in court for a while. He gets a statement read against him.
No, he gets brought in
handcuffs. Because I want to see that.
The sergeant at arms drags his rumpled self in and sits him down. That's what happened.
When has that happened? Because they held Holder in contempt. They didn't drag him in. So I don't know. Is that something? Are they planning that? Because I'd like to see that. I'd like to see them actually do something. I just see a lot of bluster, a lot of, we're going to file a motion. We never seem to actually get anywhere. And they seem to keep getting away with whatever it is they're doing. You know, whether it's gerrymandering or not responding to subpoenas or not showing important documents or just having press conferences, any of that. They just don't do anything. And they get away with everything they want. And the Democrats, they just don't seem to have power, even when they do have power.
Well, Paul Irving, that is the House Sergeant at Arms.
Okay, so what? Is he loading his six gun now? What's he...
He works with the architect of the Capitol, and he basically coordinates dragging these people in who ought to have complied and don't. He, I think, gets approached by people like Nadler and the House Speaker, and they coordinate holding them, you know, holding their feet to the fire. Literally, they will drag them in. It's like federal, like a bench warrant, basically. And they can fight it all they want in court, but I mean, this is. There are mechanisms for this, and they are at the disposal of the House leadership.
It's just, you know, it's so frustrating to see all these things happening and to just hit a dead end constantly. Now, you can say we've been dealing with the Mueller report now, the investigation for 2 years, and like Lindsey Graham said today, it's over. Yeah, it's over to you. It's not over to people that want actual answers to things. You want it to be over. I can get that. I understand why you want this to be finished. But with so many unanswered questions, so many blacked out pages, so many things that have not been addressed, and so much evidence of a cover-up, you can't be surprised when people want to continue asking questions. And when you don't show up and answer the questions, that makes them want to ask questions even more. Now, We have comfort knowing that Mueller is probably going to testify. So, hey, we can get our answers then. No. Because as long as Mueller remains a Justice Department employee, Trump can keep him from testifying. He can order him not to. And he has to not show up. And so it seems every time we get close, they do something to prevent it from moving forward. It's so incredibly frustrating. And I just wonder, is this nation prepared for what we have right now? for the situation that we are in right now, we don't seem to have the means to stop the evil that's going on. And I don't use that term loosely. There is evil going on out there between kids being locked up, you know, separated from their parents, innocent kids, to all kinds of attacks on poor people and horrors on the environment. And I mean, we don't have enough time to go into all of it. I mean, just today, Pompeo, it was either today or yesterday.
Yeah.
Our Secretary of State, he said the Arctic is at the forefront of opportunity and abundance. He said this in Finland. It houses 13% of the world's undiscovered oil, 30% of its undiscovered gas, an abundance of uranium, rare earth minerals, gold, diamonds, millions of square miles of untapped resources, fisheries galore. Steady reductions in sea ice are opening new passageways and new opportunity for trade. It could potentially slash the time it takes to travel between Asia and the West by as much as 20 days. Arctic sea lanes could become the 21st century Suez and Panama canals. These people want global warming. They want climate change. They're pushing for it. It's not they don't believe in it. They believe they can use it to their advantage. The rest of the world, it's not just us anymore. The rest of the world is threatened by these people. What is the rest of the world doing? You know, let's stop playing nice. Let's start doing things. We break treaties. We violate people's rights everywhere. We don't care about international courts. We threaten them. We invade countries. We do all kinds of horrible things. And that's just to other countries. The things they're doing here are horrible. So, world, come on, help us out here. we want you to take action. We want you to make these people miserable. Sanctions, something. Tell us. We're here, you know. We want to do something as well. But as long as people get their electronic gizmos, as long as people are told that they're doing well, even though we all know in a couple of years, decades, whatever, it's going to fall apart because of all the debt that we are accumulating. As long as people are happy now or think they're happy now, they're not going to do anything. That's how China stays around. I mean, they're a brutal regime, but people are getting their iPhones or equivalent or whatever, and lots of capitalism in the streets. Absolutely. So people won't do anything as long as that happens. It's when people start feeling something, like in Venezuela, for instance. A situation, by the way, that was brought about by our sanctions. We're pushing them. We're trying to get them to be as miserable as possible. I'm not saying Maduro is any angel. He certainly deserves to be driven from power, but you got to recognize where it's coming from and the manipulation that's going on. I'm trying to do the same thing to Iran and all kinds of other places. It's really sickening.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you're turning 18, make sure you sign up for the Selective Service so that you can be drafted.
Uh-huh.
When the war starts, you'll definitely want to kiss your mom and dad goodbye.
Do you have anything constructive to say? Or
no, I'm pretty...
This is what we are driven to, though. We run out of constructive things to say because we're so frustrated by it all.
Yeah.
The thing is, people need to wake up. People need to do things. And if people don't, then we get what we deserve. And, you know, whether it's... Well, we've given up taking phone calls here because no one ever calls. People don't want to talk about politics. It's inconvenient. It's a bummer. Well, you know, what's more of a bummer is when your whole society falls apart, when everything you believe in crumbles into dust because you didn't do anything, because you didn't stand up, because you didn't say, this is wrong, and I'm going to say something about it now while I still have the ability to speak. And unfortunately... not just here, around the world, that is a situation that we are faced with, indifference and apathy.
Yeah, I'm tired of being the only one saying anything. I know I'm not, but I feel like you know, I've been talking a lot. I think you've felt the same way, just that you know, it should not be that we're speaking into, in the face of and into a void of apathy.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, I mean, I've been fighting apathy all my life, you know, from high school on. Always, most people don't give a crap about anything. They just want, you know, they want to make a living. They want to not make waves and be what they perceive as comfortable.
It's part of our American kind of individualism. It's inherent in our identity. I think American ideology or whatnot. You know, a rugged individualism and all of that. But the self-interest, I'm not saying, like, you know, if you're into your community or your church or whatever, that you don't care about other people. But I think that sort of removal, that arm's length from people you may not know, or thinking that, you know, if it doesn't affect you, it's not important. Well, you know, your neighbors and the other people it does affect, you know, that impact comes back and may in a sort of counterintuitive way impact you and so on and so forth. So we need to be considerate, I think, and not so self-interested. Look, all the time.
If this were Paris, you know, the streets would be on fire right now.
Yes.
Anything, if you do anything that affects people in a particular way, if you raise the price of milk by 5 cents, people will be out in the streets.
Well,
not saying we need to be on fire, but we need to be out there. We need to be angry. We need to be doing something, because right now we're not doing anything, and we're getting the results that's, you know, that you deserve when you don't do anything.
I think people are too afraid. They're too afraid to be loud, to be obnoxious. I mean, that's what protests are. I mean, they see stuff in Venezuela and think that's what's going to happen here. Now, you know, there is escalation and there's escalation, but you got to at least try in somewhere in between until it does escalate. And
well, the other thing is people don't see why. You know, I'm comfortable. Employment rate is low. The economy is doing great. These are mirrors.
Well,
are illusions. Dig a little deeper, and you'll see what's actually happening is not so good, and speech is being trampled upon. People are afraid. People are contentious. This is no way to live. We need to communicate, and we need to not turn on each other, especially people who are opposing this regime. The last thing you need to be doing is turning on other people who oppose the regime. You need to be uniting, because there's more of us than there are of any other side. And that other side, you know what? I don't think we should be demonizing them either. I think we should be reaching out to them. I don't think most of them are bad people. I think there are bad people running things right now, people who don't care about immigrants, about poor people, about the environment, about almost anything that we care about. And I don't think that's true of most of the quote-unquote Trump supporters. But we'll never know that if we don't communicate with them. We've hung out. We've been to various parts of the country. And these are some nice people. And, you know, but if you demonize them, if you talk down to them, they won't listen. They'll demonize you as well. And you basically, you just have this confrontation that never goes away. That's not going to work.
The militarization is scary. But I think, like you said, it's about having greater numbers. And there's only so much you can do if everyone is out and opposed to that militarized force that powers that be might want to wield against us.
We're out of time. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Hopefully next week we'll hear some progress. We're actually doing something constructive, maybe destructive. Stop being so nice. It's part of the democratic way to raise your voice when it's necessary. Good night.
Nice guys cannot, and the nice guys shall not be nice.